Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
Professor DeMarco Murray, he's retiring after seven seasons. I'm surprised. I think he's still got good football left, but obviously no one was willing to meet his price. Do you think this is the case where he is actually done, or do you think he could come out of retirement once a couple injuries happen?
No, I think there's a little gamesmanship going on here, because you notice he was on a little bit of a media watch this week. I mean, he did a podcast with Adam Schefter and didn't even hint that retirement was in the cards. Then, of course, today he goes on NFL Live and announces his retirement. He did talk about the four teams that were interested in him, at least to talk, and you kind of get the idea they all offered the minimum salary because, you know, he just didn't accept it. I mean, Seattle was one of the four teams. You know, they had, I think Washington was one, and Detroit was one. I mean, the teams that were looking for running backs. And so I guess with the offers being low, he's taken the tack, well, I'm not going to put my body out there. And it's understandable. He would have made $790,000 because he's a seven-year guy, because he's not even up to that, you know, the 915 level yet. And so I think the disappointment with that gives him a position to come out and say, I say I'm retiring, but I just want to let you know I'm still around. But I think he technically might retire and stay that way. But again, I still think if the right call happens at the right time with the right money, he could come back. Unfortunately, when you do something like this, you're not going to get the right money.
Who do you think will be the rushing leader this year, and how many yards will it be, John?
I think it could be Chris Carson, and I'm going between 850 and 950 because, you know, what they need to do is find a way to get about 2,000 yards. They had 1,600 and some last year with Russell Wilson getting about somewhere in like 380 or so, which, of course, tells you their other running backs were getting less than 100 yards a game. But I think with the dual backfield, the fact that they will run the ball more, and one of the big problems is they didn't get many fourth quarter runs by running backs because they were usually trailing. You know, in more than 60% of the games, they were trailing going into the fourth quarter. And Danny's buddies over at Pro Football Focus, you know, came out and talked about the incredible numbers and points and things of that nature that Russell Wilson did in the fourth quarter of games, his accuracy and all that, having been the best fourth quarter guy. But now, if they get the running game going, that's why, you know, it's not out of the question for Carson to get 1,000, because I think if he would have stayed healthy last year, he would have gotten that. But, you know, Penny, you figure, can get maybe 400 to 450. You know, other backs will chip in there. And if they can just get to 2,000, and again, they just need about 110 yards a game from the running backs, or, you know, a little bit, they can definitely do that.
Speaking of Pro Football Focus, John, the offensive line, they rated all the offensive lines in the NFL. They've got the Texans at 32 and last, the Jets at 31, and the Seahawks, John, at number 30. Is that an accurate assessment?
I don't buy it right now, because, again, I think that, you know, clearly, you know, they have to go on the analytics and what they see, and they haven't seen how the changes in this offensive line are to a point where, you know, I think they will be better, and they'll certainly run the ball better and do a better job with Mike Solari's system and the talent that they have. But what I thought was a little unusual. Now, didn't they say they were 27th? Because I thought they always had him like a 30, 32 all for the last couple of years. So they say they got worse. I don't buy the idea that they got worse. They can't get worse. There's no way they can get worse. They're about as bad as they could be. So, no, I think there's going to be an improvement. So right now you base it on last year's information. But, again, I think you update it to this year, it will be better.
Well, where would you put them then, like 25?
I'd say probably I put them right where the Pro Football Focus put the running game. They put the running game at 22, so I would say 22. So I think they can make a jump from being one of the worst three offensive lines or worst four offensive lines to being maybe one of the worst 10. But I think that could be a – because, again, if you get to 22, you're pretty much right in the middle. Because, again, I know it's lower than 16, but I think that, you know, because there's going to be a pretty good balance. Because, remember, once you start to get below 10, most of the lines aren't good anyways. I mean, you may have 10 real good lines, but, you know, there's not a big gap, I think, between 11 and 26.
What kind of a year do you think Fluker's going to have?
I think it'll be okay. I mean, what I wonder about, and that's why I wonder, you know, if they will sign J.R. Sweezy, can he stay healthy for 16 games? I mean, you know, he can do a good run-blocking job. In the games he was in with the Giants last year, they had a 25-yard bump in rushing yards, and that was good. And so, you know, you can see he can do that. Not a great pass blocker, but, you know, if they can, you know, but you wonder with the ankle injury, he had a sore knee, you know, or with that 342-pound body, can he play 16 games? If he can play 16 games, I think he can do pretty well.
Professor, I don't know if we've ever seen a scandal quite like this one. Ray Lewis lost half his Twitter followers today when Twitter purged fake accounts.
Yeah, so what now? There was a fake account that was on his, and so
he was mentioned in the New York Times story about like suspiciously high Twitter follower numbers.
Right.
They're saying it appears that he had purchased Twitter followers. And today, Twitter basically did a purge. And anybody whose account had been blocked, they're no longer counted as your followers. And Ray Lewis's went from 712,000 followers to 364,000 followers.
Wow.
I know.
That's amazing. And I know that they're going through some of that right now because they're trying to clean up some of the... I've got to watch how mine are because...
No, you're fine, Professor. You're still at 1.4 million. I just checked.
Good. Thank
that's
you.
That's exactly right. Your followers are real and they're fantastic, John.
That's good. Thank you. So, that is kind of strange because, you know, to lose that many followers at one time, that's sad.
I know. Well, I wonder if...
And I like Ray, so it's like, I hope he can get them back.
Yeah, either that or it just doesn't really matter. I always think that the idea of buying Twitter followers always amused me to
But why would you buy... Well, no, I can see why you can buy Twitter followers. I can understand that. There are economic things that you can get out of that because, if you start, trying to, sell articles and sell different things, I mean, there's a big, big monetary thing in that. So I can understand monetarily wise why to do it. But again, you're going to get caught.
Do you like Twitter, John?
Yes. I mean, well, yes and no. I love following. I love, the instantaneous stuff. I mean, you pick up so many things. I am remorse in saying I don't tweet out enough. As time goes on, I'll tweet out more. But, I love the fact because it's the information age, and it really gets you closer to the information.
John,
I love
that
part of it.
Yeah, that is. I like Twitter, but I don't tweet very often, John. Usually I just have pictures of my dog, and I just have some random comment. We heard from the 253, John, on the Coors Light text line, wondering about Jimmy Graham. How big of a loss do you think that will be for the Seahawks?
I think it can be a decent one because, technically he was the number two pass catcher on the team. I mean, he was the second target. If it wasn't going to Doug Baldwin, there's more than a decent chance it was going to go to Jimmy Graham. And so, but then you look at how he either wasn't used enough or he lost some speed last year. And so what I'm wondering about, coming off that patellar injury, and again, I'm a big Jimmy Graham supporter. I'm just wondering with that 8.9-yard average that he had, less than 9 yards a catch, and the fact that when somebody would come near him with a big hit, he'd kind of drop the ball. I'm just kind of wondering, is that is that knee one where he's trying to protect it? And number two, is his speed now where he can't get downfield as much? That's the one thing I keep wondering about.
John, the Seahawks, we talked about Earl Thomas and what it means. Are you expecting him to be here? We're 2 weeks out from training camp. We talked about the Instagram thing yesterday.
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to be here? Because I've heard that there's some expectation that maybe he'll show up but might not practice. What have you been hearing?
No, I don't buy that. I think he's going to hold out. Now, again, it's a mistake because the only thing – he's not going to gain anything by holding out. All he's going to do is lose money. He's going to lose $40,000 a game. He loses the possible percentage of his signing bonus stuff. I mean, if they are going to trade him, which I think is now more than likely, then he makes it easier to let him hold out because he'll save them money. Not the big $8.5 million. I mean, he's not going to hold out and miss paychecks in the regular season. But, I mean, he leaves himself vulnerable to all the fines and all that stuff. And so, and then all the Seahawks need is the time to see if there's an injury to a free safety in training camp or if Dallas does want to get interested. So I don't think he's going to be on the team. And I think he's doing him a disservice by not, being there for the first day of practice or any day that's going to cost him $40,000.
Another thing, Richie Incognito, I just saw a headline, this is on ESPN.com, that he's been named an ambassador of an anti-bullying nonprofit group, which I think is something that's really cool. He was obviously, Richie Incognito was identified as one of the leaders in the bullying of Jonathan Martin there with the Miami Dolphins. But Richie, he indicated he'd retired.
Mm-hmm.
He's been released by the Bills. Is he still looking to play football?
It's hard to tell. I think you need to check with him each day because he's kind of going through some of the weird things that happen to players. I mean, he comes out and he announces his retirement because he said that his body's now breaking down. He has all these different problems. And then the next thing you know, he kind of laughs at the Bills, and they do put him on the retired list and put him on the street. And then the next thing you know, he comes back and wants to come back and play. I mean, he came back and did support LeSean McCoy the other day on Twitter by coming out out and saying that, hey, I know the whole story here, and he wasn't even in town. He didn't do it. But, of course, everybody now knows he wasn't in town, and so did he order somebody to do it? That wasn't answered by Richie. But, you know, I think that, you know, Richie, I think, is just going through some, you know, maybe some tough emotional times right now, whether he's in or out. But right now, I think he's out, and I think most people think he's out.
John, you ever played the Madden video game?
I never did, no. Although I was, you know, although every year I keep on peeking at the Madden ratings.
Yeah, I was looking at them today, and they've got there's seven guys who have 99, the top ranking you can get. Mm-hmm. But for the Seahawks, Bobby Wagner has a 97 and Earl Thomas a 95. Do you think that they have those two right, or would you flip-flop that and put Earl a little ahead of Bobby?
No, I think right now, in fact, if you look at even most of the sites that have ratings, I mean, they put Bobby ahead of you know, Earl, and I think that may be necessarily more the position than anything else, because, you know, one thing I know in Pro Football Focus, Earl usually doesn't get the greatest grades because he doesn't get much action. I mean, he's the free safety going deep, and, you know, he's either coming up to make a play, he gets all the spacing, and he can do so many things. And again, I think that, you know, he's on path for a possible Hall of Fame career, you know, and Bobby Wagner has emerged as one of the best defensive players in the league. And so when you look at that, when you say, okay, who, if you would look at the numbers and you look at everything else, who has a better chance to win Defensive Player of the Year, Earl Thomas or Bobby Wagner? And it's probably going to be Bobby Wagner because he's closer to the action.
Care to guess who the top-rated rookie is on the Seahawks, John?
What, it would be Rashard Penny?
No, but you're close. He's at 76. There's okay. One player that's at 77 that was drafted by the Seahawks. One more guess, John.
Shaquem Michael
Griffin.
Dixon?
Not Shaquem Griffin.
Michael Dixon?
Michael Dixon. That's right, John, the punter.
The overrated
Australian punter. Is at 77, and John Ryan rated at 75.
Well, I know, and this is the time of the year where we're all kind of creating questions, right? We want, you know, we want lists. We want, would you take this guy or that guy or this subject or that subject and all that? And I know that was one of the questions over the last couple of weeks. Which Seahawk rookie will have the biggest impact? And even though I think, you know, Rashard Penny's going to have a great career and a good rookie season, I think it's going to be Michael Dixon. Because I think with the weird way that he punts and the way that the ball comes down, he'll create a couple turnovers with punters. I mean, punt returners having a hard time kind of figure out what he's doing.
Professor, we always love catching up with you. We got a little bit of a short show, so we're going to get the Mariners set up for the Mariners finale. You've got a podcast this week, and your guest, it sounded like that was an awesome conversation you had.
Yeah, Fred Jackson, you know, we were able to talk about, well, he's got a flag football game tomorrow, and if he wins, he has a chance to, you know, he and his teammates can win $1 million. That's a pretty good one. It's going to be on the NFL Network at 4 o'clock. But we talked about Marshawn Lynch, because he spent a good portion of his career with Marshawn, both in Buffalo and here. He talked about the state of running backs in the National Football League, how the game has changed running back since he came in. A lot of good football stuff.
Well, you can get that Schooled with the Professor wherever you get your podcast. John, thank you so much, and have a great weekend.
Okay, thanks.
If you missed any of the Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer, download the podcast 710sports.com. The Mariners getting set to take on the Rockies, and I tend to think that this is the perfect place for them to get right, in that they're at Colorado. This should boost their offense. If the biggest problem that you've had over the past week, and the Mariners have, is scoring runs. Five of their past six games, they failed to score more than three runs. In three of those games, they've been held to fewer than three. A couple one-run losses, and then they had a two runs in last night's loss. Go to Colorado. You should be able to get the bats right there.
Well, you should, with the altitude, Hitters Park, everything going on there. We mentioned earlier what I've never seen an over-under that high, Danny. 12.5 runs expected in tonight's game in Las Vegas, the over-under on combined runs scored in this game. And, you look at the pitching matchup, with it being Christian Bergman being called up for a spot start from Tacoma with Felix out, and then Jeff Hoffman for Colorado. And Hoffman has taken over for Senzatella, who's been put on the DL with a blister on his finger. So there should be a lot of runs scored tonight. And hopefully, I mean, you look at the Mariners, and yeah, that's a concern. Now, Nelson Cruz won't be able to play tonight. No DH in the NL game in the NL Park. But it should be, I mean, they should come alive tonight, but only 14 runs in the last six games. So it's been tough going a little bit here lately.
How worried are you?
Well, you know me. I mean, I'm always upbeat and optimistic about everything, so I'm not worried at all, Danny.
No, that's not true.
No, I'm a little concerned. I wasn't even thinking the A's were. I was always thinking the Angels once they got over their injuries, but now they've got Garrett Richards who's going to be out, and so you dismiss the A's. It's hard to do that when when they have Mike Trout and what they have hitting-wise. But, boy, you look at the A's and they're just – they're actually – I used to think that they were just, boy, that's a plucky little group they have down there. They're gritty and all those kinds of things. But, actually, they're really good. I mean, this is a good team down there. And, boy, the way they've been playing lately – now, they're playing at San Francisco, but the Oakland, they've been really good on the road. They're just coming off taking 3-4 in Houston. They nearly got the sweep if it wasn't for that weird play – where Lucroy threw it into right field on the Bregman Q-stick job there, they might have swept down there. So, yeah, it's. I'm just hoping that the Mariners at least get one, maybe two there at Colorado. The Rockies have been hot. They play better on the road, though, than they do at home. So it's a hard – I think if the Mariners were to get swept and if Oakland won 2 of 3 and they were only 3 or 4 games out at the break, then, yeah, there'd be a reason for a big concern.
You watch the way the Mariners have played, and the A's in some ways are built and are winning for very much the same reason that the Mariners are. The A's are a younger team, but they've got a lockdown back of the bullpen. They're two best relievers, Trevino and then Trinan. Trinan is the all-star closer. Trevino is a really good setup man. They've got some good young players. Their first baseman, Matt Olson, which is really the reason that the Mariners ended up with Ryan Healy, is because the A's like their young talent at that position.
And I really like the lefty, too, Manaea.
Yeah, Manaea is a great starting pitcher for them. He's top. Chapman, their third baseman, I think is a future all-star.
Gold glove, for sure.
Yeah, he's a really good defensive player. The A's are put together well. The one thing with Oakland is you might see them make some moves where they look to build for the future. Like, it's really weird to say this because you see how hot they've been in getting there, but Billy Bean, he could seem, they've got a nucleus of talent where he could make a move with a couple of veterans to accumulate and build even more for next year or the year after that. I think it'll be really interesting to see how Oakland, because I don't think you can tell for sure, are they going to be buyers in this market? They might not be, because they might think that their best chance at winning is a year or two from now. So watching how they go through this.
Do you really think they might do that?
Billy Bean is...
as hot as they've been lately?
Billy Bean has never been someone who is beholden to that idea of it's our window and we've got to win now. He is more than willing to take on guys as rentals for the final year and then move them at the trading deadline. Like, I think you could see where they are both a buyer and a seller. Where they, if somebody offers them something that they think is more... If they get offered more than some like Chris Davis or somebody I could see them moving a guy where we're all going to raise our eyebrows. Like, why in the world would they trade him? They're right in the middle of this. I could see that. I also think that they very well could acquire players that will be able to help them. Billy Bean is one of the more unpredictable people when it comes in. I do think they'll add some relievers. Like, I can almost guarantee they're going to add some relief arms. And Jerry DePoto talking to us yesterday that he thinks we'll see more relievers piled up, but starting pitching is going to remain. It'll be the way the Mariners, I don't feel that they're in some jeopardy of falling off track here in Colorado, but you need to see them start hitting because we've still got more than a month until Robinson Cano is eligible to return. And then, of course, if they make the playoffs, Cano won't be there. And their offense has gone quiet. Like you said, what is it, 16 runs over the past
14 in the last six games.
14 in the past six games, and they had one game where they had 6 runs, and they've really, other than that, haven't been able to put big numbers across. They've won since Cano's suspension, in large part because the starting pitching has been so exceptional. And now with Paxton leaving yesterday, and you got Bergman pitching tonight, and Felix is on the DL, we're going to see their depth for the first time. We're going to see their depth tested, for the first time.
Well, this is one of those games, too. Well, probably all three there at Colorado where you need to score runs. You're not going to win a 3-2 game there, more than likely anyway, at Colorado. So, and then not having Cruz, it's going to be more difficult. You got Bergman hitting tonight. I was kind of hoping that we'd see, well, we will see Leak on Sunday. But that's a little questionable right now. Mike Leak coming off the 2 outings that he's had against the Angels. And you think about him at a hitter's park there at altitude. Concern about Mike Leake on Sunday, but you know that you get a good bat with Mike Leake in there. And then also with Marco Gonzalez, I was hoping he was going to pitch in Colorado because we know what a type of a hitter he is as well. But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think these guys will get it going, though. Like you point out, it's, you know, Colorado, it's altitude, and they're going against a guy that's just getting his first major league start of the year.
Who do you want to see heat up for the Mariners?
Boy, I want to just see Seager just continue to keep going. Now, Seager... He's been better lately.
Yeah,
but he's
been
still
better.
Around 239, somewhere in there. And I just get tired of people, yourself included, Danny, criticizing Kyle Seager because I just love the guy. And I know there's reason to get upset with him because he's making $17 million a year or $19 million or whatever it is, and you expect more from him. But I love the guy. I don't care. I'm tired of all the haters on Kyle Seager, and I want to see him continue to hit the way that he has. His numbers are right there right now. We're halfway through it, or a little more than halfway, and I think in the end his numbers are going to be there. But I know there have been some at-bats that haven't been that great with Kyle Seager, and so I'm hoping to see some more consistency from him. He's hitting cleanup tonight.
He's one of the guys that can carry the team. He's got a bat that's that strong, and his average has been down. It's really been his power has been there. We've seen that all season, but you would like to see the average continue to climb up. It is Danny David Moore. It's an absolutely gorgeous afternoon out there. The Mariners are in Colorado. We'd like to see them get back on the winning track after dropping 2 of 3, losing 4 of their past 6 here. Going to have Christian Bergman on the mound tonight. We want to thank Jaron Reed for joining us. Taylor
Jacobs back, and Matt Harden, too.
Taylor Jacobs, Matt Harden was here for the three of us. We thank you for listening. We'll talk to you Monday on Danny, Dave, and More.